Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, I'm Arthur, and it is the pleasure to welcome you to GoTo Book Club. I'm head of Java Kotlin development in Virtus Lab Company, and today I will have the pleasure to have discussion with Maciej Jędrzejewski, who is the author of Master Software Architecture, Pragmatic Guide. So Maciej, let's introduce yourself. You are the star here.
Thanks, Arthur. So, as you already probably have heard, my surname is quite hard to pronounce. So, everyone knows me as MJ, and I'm always introducing myself as MJ. I come originally from Poland, but I moved to Switzerland several years ago. And nowadays, I work as a fractional architect, consultant, advisor, auditor, and sometimes also mentor. I'm author of Master Software Architecture book, and it's great to be here.
Okay, so like we see, you have a lot on your plate. However, I would like, because you know, it's pretty interesting career. So I wanted to go back to the roots and ask you the question, because I assume that there was a point in time when you just decided, okay, it's not time for the crayons anymore. It's time to start to have some fun with computers. What was your first machine?
So maybe how it all started. So the first problems I solved that I remember were hardware related. And today, to this day, I still remember the first Atari. It was Atari 65XE. And the games.
Okay, I also started with Atari, so we have some common points here.
That's great. I remember these games uploading from cassettes. The slightest rustle could cause the game not to load. So we had, for example, such a method that we took air into our lungs and did not breathe for a while because, you know, every little disturbance caused the game that was not loaded. And this is something that I remember. And later, I think I fell in love with processors and overclocking them to their limits. And this is how I burned a lot of components to the ground, including motherboards.
And in those times, components were pretty pricey. So, okay, it was probably interesting way to learn.
Yes, it was interesting way to learn. However, it was already this time that you were able to buy some old equipment quite cheap. So I remember that I was paying like probably $5-6 for something really old. So it wasn't that bad, but still it was bad at the time when I was a kid because I didn't have a lot of money. But I loved it.
So you have a tinkerer in your heart, that's for sure.
Yes, that's for sure. And then I think it was already the first adventures in programming, quite late, because at the age of 17, of course, not counting some scripts that I was writing in PowerShell or Bash. And then I remember that I started in high school with C++. And this adventure lasted for about 5 years, also during my university time. And then I switched to C#, that was my partner for, 7-8 years.
Yeah, I'm coming from the JVM space, so a bit different cup of tea. However, probably the quite close journey. Okay, so you have been tinkering with the old equipment, with the CPUs, hardware, then C#. So I have another question. Why architecture? What is interesting in that particular topic?
Why architecture? Oh, man. Where do I even start?
Probably because you are probably interested as you wrote a book about it.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's like asking a kid why they love a toy store, because there is just so much to explore, really. One of my problems is that I can't be fascinated with one topic for too long. So domain-driven design is the exception here, but in general, I have problems with that. And that is, for example, I would not be able to focus only on API design for years or on microservices. But architecture in general, for me, it's like the ultimate playground. So you can do so many different things. Think about it that architecture is this beautiful, holistic process that touches every part of software development. And it's not just about writing code or designing APIs. It's about seeing the big picture. And what really gets me excited here is how diverse it is. One day you are deep diving into the business domain, trying to understand the core of what you are building. And the next you are crunching numbers, figuring out how to handle massive scale. Then you are thinking about deployment strategies, release processes, testing approaches. So for me, it never gets boring. And don't even get me started on infrastructure topics. I mean, I started as programmer, but there is something magical about working with Terraform, playing in the cloud, setting up message brokers, or orchestrating with Kubernetes. What is still very important to remember here is that architecture is not set in stone. It evolves, it grows, it adapts. You can't just set it and just forget it. Yeah, this is not the way how it works. And at the end of the day, what really makes this software architecture fascinating is that it never stops teaching you. There is always something new to learn, a new problem to solve, a new technology to explore. It keeps you on your toes, challenges you to think differently, and rewards you with the satisfaction of seeing your ideas come to life in ways that impact thousands or even millions of users. So I know it was quite long what I said, but yes, a summary, it's just the perfect blend of creativity, problem solving, continuous learning. It's the heart of software development. And honestly, I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Okay, sounds interesting. And about, you said you are learning new stuff all the time. We'll be back on this topic, on this particular topic, because it's pretty interesting. However, now, before we delve into architecture, and we'll stay there probably for the next few hours, joking there. However, I imagine you will have a lot of stories to tell. Like we said, you wrote the book. So I would like to ask you about that book. Because why you decided to write it? Because my perspective, there's a lot of quite good books on the architectural topic on the market. Why you decided, okay, you want to add something to the discussion? What was the trigger?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are gonna look so different in the next couple of years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is gonna be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Okay, let me tell you a story here. I started as software architect around 2016. So I didn't have an official title, but I started my design tasks, workshops with customers, gathering requirements, analyzing it, recognizing the environments around me and so on. And I attended countless conferences and meetups, was involved in mastermind groups and discussions. I learned a lot. I learned microservices, caching, data streaming, NoSQL, Kubernetes, Docker, cloud technologies, and many, many more. And these concepts have helped other companies, like the big ones, and mine will benefit as well, yeah, for sure. I still remember the excitement of discovering these technologies and knowing I had to apply everything I learned. But the problem is that in the last 8 years, I've made almost every mistake related to software architecture that you can think of. Whatever I heard, I applied. I easily justified it to myself because these were always described as silver bullet solutions. And of course, I wanted to follow best practices. But the problem is that this contradicts pragmatism. And instead, it would be better to just look for solutions that would help solve your problems in your context and support your team in achieving great results. So I am talking here about mixing concepts, trying various things, having fun with software architecture, and remembering that every architectural decision has trade-offs. I lacked patterns in the beginning and support from experienced architects. I was a bit wandering in the dark, grasping at one thing or another. And over the years, I have had to learn everything myself. And I can't count the time I have lost. And this is why I decided to write this book, really. It's a practical guide where you will learn about all the important areas like business analysis, security, architectural patterns, deployment and release strategies, testing, trade-offs, because this is very important part of software architecture that every single decision have its
trade-offs.
Everything
is trade-off. Everything. Like your life.
Exactly. Exactly. And I just want to show in this book, I just want to show the reader the map of key areas in an easy to understand way. However, one very important thing, even though it's very practical, very pragmatic, you just have to set your own path on this map that I give you. Because each software architect has their unique ways of dealing with it.
Okay, you mentioned the reader, and let me follow up on this topic, because I wanted to ask you the question: who is the target audience? Because every book, I've never been an author of a book. However, I imagine that if you have idea, okay, I will write a book. The first question you need to ask: for whom? And what was the answer in your case?
In general, all software engineers who are either interested in software architecture, and it doesn't matter if you are junior, senior developer, or you just moved to a software architect path, or you just start as software architect but feel overwhelmed by the amount of information. It's more about giving you a book which connects the dots. This is something very important because I think we hear a lot about separate concepts like, hey, here you have microservices. Hey, here you have APIs. Hey, authentication, authorization, some other security stuff. So now you need somehow to connect dots. And in this book, I show my way of thinking, my path, how I handle projects, how I handle product development. So I think even if you are junior, you are a starter, you will be able to get a lot out of this book.
Yeah, and that was also my impression because when I have been reading it, I was thinking about the people in my team who are just thinking what to do after being the senior developer, spending most of the time on writing code. What is the next step? And I think that would be a very nice book for them to read. And I will probably, okay. So that's probably, I agree with your impression who is the reader. As a person who read it, I agree that probably you had a good hint on that. Because such a book is pretty necessary for people. Architecture, like you mentioned, it's a very broad topic, very complex with a lot of different niches. So having such a pragmatic guide that will show you, okay, how it looks in practice, not just in theory, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I have already heard from one of my reviewer and one reader that, hey, this is the book that I haven't yet read, in the meaning of it is really different from other architecture books that are in the market. So I think this is this niche.
Yeah, it's good to have niche. And talking once again about the process, because that's also something that's interesting. if people, okay, because I imagine a lot of people, maybe not a lot, however, there will be people who are interested not only in the book, but also in the process, because they are thinking about doing something by themselves. Maybe some, they have some ideas. Maybe they want to create, publish book themselves. And yours is quite, I don't want to say unique, because this is the trend I see for the last decade that is getting more and more popular. However, I want to understand why self-publish, because you published your book yourself, by yourself.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we can say that I published it by myself, because I just used this Leanpub platform, and Leanpub just gives you a platform to write, and that's it. All the rest you are responsible for. And there are two primary reasons for my decision. First, I wanted to write the book in my own style, like free from the constraints of the publisher's guidelines. I value creative freedom and independence from third-party influence. This was the most important part. But second reason was the financial aspect. So when you self-publish through platforms like Leanpub, you typically earn 80% or more of the revenue per book. And this is a stark contrast to traditional publishing, where the author's share is often reversed, receiving only about 20% and sometimes less per ebook. Yeah, because here we are talking about ebooks. For books, it's usually way less. So these were two main reasons. But of course, then everything is on your shoulders. You have to prepare the content of the book. You need to edit it. You should, or you could, hire a copy editor. I hired a copy editor for my book just to look at the sentences, just to look at this content, how it is structured and so on. So it helped me a lot. You have to prepare the book cover by yourself. So this is something that I also delegated to the external consultant or service provider. So a lot of things.
So it was like a project. You have been a project manager for your own book.
Yes, yes. With setting my own deadline. You know, this is, I talked with several authors who publish for traditional publishers, and they say that they couldn't write self-published book because the problem is lack of pressure. So like, you need to put a lot of pressure on yourself. And when you work for publisher puts this pressure on you. So this is something that is not that trivial.
Yeah, I can say that it's probably, okay, I will go sideways a bit. However, it's probably the biggest problem of all days online courses, that if you are going, because I still remember times when people discuss probably that's the future of the education, that we do not need those old university buildings because everything is online. We have multi-online courses. We can go to Stanford sitting in the Krakow. However, it's probably not the case, because people are people. And if you are not pushed by the professors, by the proper schedule, sometimes it's easy to start the first course. However, probably you are not able to go to the whole curriculum. So I see with books, it's quite similar story.
Yeah, yeah, I see it similar. Yeah, you need to stay consistent. This perseverance makes the entire difference, yeah?
Yeah, and makes the result. Okay, yeah. So very interesting. Great to hear that. It's very interesting from my perspective, the process like that, that you, it's not just reading, it's just being able to push your own deadlines, find the proper people. Like I said, project management work, for sure. So it's interesting direction. Okay, that's probably... We've been talking about the books for the last 15-20 minutes. Now I would like to cover not just the, I would say, process and the medium itself, however, also the content, because you mentioned, and in the books there's a lot of mentioning of the DDD, domain-driven design, for those who do not know the term. I assume everybody who listen such a book club probably have heard about the term. However, I would like to ask you maybe a bit harder question, because for me, I like DDD. I like a lot of the concept of DDD. However, I feel it didn't deliver on the promise, because I remember I started to be interested in DDD 10 years ago. DDD itself is far, far older. However, in theory, it sounds like every pieces are there and it should work for the, in the most of the project. If we'll just follow the framework, framework is probably the good, bad word here. However, follow some, set of rules. If we'll go by the book, okay, jumping there, it should work. Still, during my career, while some elements of DDD are pretty useful, and I love, for example, creating the context map, I like having some pieces of the Ubix language, there was not many projects that truly went the DDD way or to through the whole process. Because my impression is people are starting using the DDD as the one shot. So, okay, now is the group of architects. We'll define the Ubix language. We'll define some architectural boundaries. We create a whole set of documents that are suggested because there's some documents suggesting DDD as well. And then, unfortunately, after this first initial spark of the creativity, spark of the energy, people just doing to start to do standard development without getting back to the original materials. And I do not understand why. Do you have any idea why it's like that? Or maybe I'm wrong and it's just in my bubble.
No. I think you're right. So, in my opinion, there are two big issues, at least issues that I have noticed when it comes to domain-driven design and software architecture evolution. Let me break them for you. First, there is this tendency for folks to just jump straight into the tactical DDD stuff. You know, aggregates, entities, value objects, all that. And I mean already coding stuff. But here is the thing. They often do this without really getting a grip on the problem they are trying to solve or the domain they are working in. It's like trying to build a house without understanding the land you are building on. And the second issue is about the strategic part of DDD. Sure, we start off strong. We plan our bounded contexts. We create a context map. We have this whole plan laid out. But here is where it gets tricky. We often forget to plan for follow-ups. And let's face it, software architecture isn't static. It changes because our businesses change. Think about it.
Hopefully. The problem is with businesses that does not change what is necessary. And it also happens.
Yeah, exactly. It happens. Think about it. In that first year of development, you start to see patterns emerge. You see how your bounded context evolve and change. Some grow, some shrink. You might realize that some parts are communicating too often with each other, which could mean you've got the boundaries wrong. And there is a lot of flux in the beginning. The real problem comes when you don't keep an eye on its evolution. If you are not careful, if you don't nurture it, you run a high risk of your application turning into a big ball of mud. And yeah, trust me, nobody wants that. And what we really need is to make this a continuous process. We need to care about every single decision we make, no matter how small it seems. If we have to add feature, we need to think how we want to integrate it into current landscape of the system architecture. And this way, our architecture can evolve alongside our understanding of the domain and the business needs. So it's not a one and done deal. It's an ongoing journey. Let's call it journey. It's like AI stuff, but no.
Okay. Now we have it crossed on our checklist. You mentioned AI. We can carry on.
Yeah. I think I will be talking about it later a bit, maybe. So yeah, that's the key takeaway. Treat your architecture like a living, breathing thing. Nurture it, guide its growth, and it will grow with you. Ignore it.
Okay.
And yeah, you might find yourself in a muddy situation. So that's very important to know. It's just an ongoing process. And it doesn't matter if we are talking just about DDD. It's about every single thing that comes with the architecture, starting from infrastructure components and ending up on concepts like modeling.
Okay, so maybe I will follow up on that because you are a consultant. You probably have seen a lot of projects. How to do that in practice? Because do you need a special process for that, special group of people, special role in the team? Or maybe it's something that should be just bread of the daily work?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, maybe first about this consulting and how did I get there? And then I will move smoothly to the second part. So for me, consulting isn't just a job. It's kind of a passion, you know? There is nothing quite like the feeling of talking with customers, digging into their problems and seeing their faces light up when you help them find a solution. It's incredibly rewarding, really. And don't get me wrong, you can certainly solve problems in a regular job as well. But the thing is that in a typical role, you are often confined to a specific set of problems within your domain. You might spend years working in the same area, which has its benefits, sure, but it can also limit your exposure to other domains, other projects. And as a consultant, you get to switch domains regularly, meet different people, experience various corporate cultures, and work with teams of all shapes and sizes. And this keeps you on your toes, always learning, always adapting, yeah? And often companies already have brilliant software developers. They are smart, they are talented, but sometimes they just lack experience in software architecture and fall into common traps. And this company, for example, does not have any budget to hire software architect because, yeah, let's be honest, software architects are usually quite expensive. And this is where I come in as this resource as a service, a consultant.
Yeah, it's a support role. The role that you need, however, it's not having the do not have direct impact of the delivered feature in the way that, okay, we have more developers, we'll just deliver something with the customer quicker in the short term. It's paying off in the long term, so it's an investment.
Yes, it's an investment, and the problem is, I describe it in the book, that this is some kind of investment that is never seen. Because if you don't focus on software architecture, you will see a lot of problems probably in 3, 4, 5 years with your maintenance costs. They will grow exponentially at some point. And it might even kill your business because your profit that you get from the application will be less than the maintenance cost that you need to cover.
Or you are lacking flexibility and you are not able to compete. I understand that. And this is something that I've seen also a lot.
Exactly. But you know, the funniest thing is that if you focus on this architecture over all these years, you evolve with it, then it's not visible. Non-technical people like business people, stakeholders, they just see, okay, there is some maintenance cost. This maintenance cost is cool. It's low, but no one sees it that it's thanks to this focus on software architecture. So if it is no focus, then it is immediately visible.
Business people see software architects only if there is a problem in software architecture. Do not care about it if everything is going smoothly.
Mm-hmm. It's quite funny because sometimes I offer this free consultations for companies. And this is like in 30 minutes to 1 hour, I can give them a direction to explore, you know. I might solve, maybe not solve their problem, but just point that, hey, look at this one. It might be a tool, a concept, or a short-term plan. They get this for free and I am completely okay with that. And in fact, there are times when such a company asks me then to implement this tool. But I am honest with them. It will be much cheaper if someone from their team does it. Yeah. It makes no sense that I integrate this tool as a software architect because, yeah, this would be more expensive than in comparison if you leave it up to your team. But I love to work together with teams. I'm not that type of consultant that you know, comes and says, hey, go in this direction or go in that direction. And that's it. No, I love to touch all these things. I love to dive into their problems. I love to dive into Kubernetes. I love to dive into modular monoliths, microservices and all this stuff. Because, yeah, this is how I try to stay on the edge of technology.
Mm-hmm. Sure thing. Okay, so you, like I said, once again, you've seen a lot and you have the flourish consultant career. So I want to, because we mentioned already one of the silver bullets that we are talking about, DDD. Have you seen any other that people think, okay, that will work for sure, because on the each conference, people are saying, okay, that's something that will solve my problems. And in reality, it's far more messy.
If only it were that simple, right? Yeah. Well, in my experience, there are quite a few magical solutions that people often tout, but they rarely work as universal fixes. They are great for their context, but not a universal one. And I think the one that I've been seeing most since, I don't know, let's say 2016, are microservices. Like, we have a problem. Okay. Microservices it. So sure. Microservices are great for certain scenarios, but turning every project into a distributed system is a recipe for unnecessary disaster. We don't think about all the problems that it brings. You know, when you work with monolithic applications, you operate in a single process, of course, if you don't scale. And all the communication within this monolithic application is handled inside this process. There is no usage of the network. And with microservices, you already fall into this world of problems related to network. You have high latency, you have network errors, you have network partitions where your net is divided into subnets and they can't connect with each other. And UX, maybe you just use some message brokers. So again, you need to send the event from or send the message from one microservice to another. So this is something that we don't think about add to that testing. So testing is very hard in distributed systems. And I mean here, let's say this integration part. Then after microservices, I would go with trendy languages. You know, sometimes I have a feeling like we are currently doing something in Java or C sharp. And yeah, it's not good enough. It's slow. So let's replace it with Rust or Go. Yeah. But switching to just another language probably won't automatically make your solution better. It won't solve your architecture problems. Once in the past, I had a situation where I had a job interview. It was several years ago. And a guy in the interview told me that, yeah, the application was really slow. So they now think about replacing React with Angular. But hey, this is not where the problem lays. Yeah, the problem is probably somewhere else. Incorrect boundaries, too big database tables, and so on. And not just the problem of using framework or framework A or framework B. Yeah, this is something, or a library B. This is something to remember. Another thing is for sure cache. Like, yeah, our reads are slow. Throw cache on it. Like without further analysis, without first looking at indexes, about optimizing queries, maybe about partitioning and sharding. So, you know, using your database to its limits before you throw a cache on it. Because if you throw cache on it, you have additional component and you have additional problems.
Okay, I've heard it multiple times. We'll go serverless and we'll just pay if it will be necessary to have a much more computing power of the throughput. Now, currently, I see that companies are much more restrictive with the finance, and probably that is good for software engineers. Maybe not for the software engineers, however, for software engineering for sure.
It's good. It's good. You know, I read it was like 1 month ago or 1.5 months ago, there was a startup that used serverless. I think it was from Vercel. so serverless on Vercel. And then they got a lot of traction. It was some kind of application with sharing photos, I think, or drawing style. Yeah, I think photos. And then they received a bill after 1 month, and it was $100,000. Yes, a lot. Because if you just put automatic scaling, then hey, it's almost infinite possibility. Yeah, so you can generate a lot of costs. And the last one that I want to mention, because I think we are slowly running out of time, is the AI. You know, this is treated today, fortunately not by developers, but by the businesses. It is treated as the solution to all problems, you know. But don't get me wrong, it's powerful, but it's not going to magically fix poor system design or unclear requirements. And if you allow, at least today, if you allow it to build your system, it will work great because, yeah, you can have a screenshot of what you want. You can put it to, let's say, Claude AI or ChatGPT, and it will probably create you a perfect front end for what you presented. But this code will become unmaintainable monster in 2, 3, 4 years, and we'll be again in this diagram where we show this exponential rise of costs of the maintenance. Yeah. And this can kill your business.
If I understand you, if I can quote, just paraphrase you, AI will help us deliver what we want. However, won't challenge us to make something better.
Today. Because I'm not saying that it won't be like that in 10, 20, 30 years. I don't think it will be faster, but you never know. It's really powerful, but still, I think we should treat AI as a supporting tool rather than the solution to all of our problems.
Okay. Apart from AI, what are the most interesting trends in the software architecture right now from your perspective?
That's a great question. And I think that we all tend to live in our own bubbles in this industry. But from what I've been seeing at conferences, meetups, and in the latest articles, discussions, there are definitely some trends that seem to be gaining a lot of traction. And first, I would say it is platform engineering. Yeah, it is really taking center stage. It's like we have collectively realized that we need to empower developers with better tools and platforms to build on. And here we can talk about different platforms, starting from cloud platforms on which you build, ending up with some internal platforms that help you just to deliver your features faster. Yeah, this is something that is very important. And I think it's really well explained in another book on LeanPub. This is called Platform Strategy, and it's by Gregor Hoppe. So I recommend to read this book because he really explains what is this platform engineering from scratch.
Because you mentioned one of the books, platform engineering, for sure. I'm 100% sure that platform engineering is a very interesting trend that everybody should be at least aware of. That is something very important currently, and people are talking about it. So it's good to know about what it is and how it can help your business. However, because you mentioned that there's some book that people of your book should read, and I assume that there's more of those. Can you recommend some titles? Because we are wrapping up, we probably will need end in the few minutes. However, that's my last question, because like we mentioned, this is your book is perfect as a first book about the software architecture. What's from your perspective is the second and the third? Apart of the platform engineering, because that's already mentioned.
And this will be quite funny because another book that I will recommend is from the same author. I am a bit biased because this is one of my favorite authors of all times, but his books are really great. And I would say that after reading my book, you can go with Software Architect Elevator. Probably you have heard about it. It's this blue book.
I've heard about it. Yeah, I've heard about this book. I remember. It's also on LeanPub, yeah?
No. I think it was published by O'Reilly, if I remember correctly. but it's also by Gregor Hoppe. And this book offers you just valuable insights into the role of software architect. It explains that you should just go from the bottom level to the upper level. So like from the engineering room to stakeholders meetings and back and forth and back and forth. So you are the glue for the entire application development. Second book that I think is super relevant is Designing Data Intensive Applications by Martin Kleppmann. It's like, yeah, it's one of my favorite books as well. I think it's not a coincidence that it's so well ranked in Goodreads in software engineering books. And from what I know, they started already writing the second edition of it.
I also have seen the announcement because I'm waiting for putting it on my shelf because I want physical copy. However, I'm waiting for the second edition. It will be delivered by the end of the next year. So I will wait a bit as far as I know. However, that's definitely one of the best book I have read.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, because I don't remember if this was this book or not, but it got traction several years after publishing for the first time. You know, nowadays everyone knows it, but I think it was for 1 or even 2 years. Not well known in the industry, and that was crazy thing because it's a fantastic book, really.
Yeah. It needed to have some build up because people started. It probably have a lot of the word of mouth, and that was the reason everybody started to talk it. And probably today there is no list of the best book of the software engineers without this one. So
yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
That's definitely. Every book probably needs to have some time to get attraction.
Yeah, I hope my book will join this list as well at some point. We'll see.
I believe it. It's possible. It's a very good piece.
Yeah, but coming back to the other books, I would say another book that is worth to read after mine is Software Architecture Hard Parts. So this is a book which shows the process how to get from the legacy application to refactoring it using different patterns, using for it. I remember that it was all about the composition there, tactical forking for sure. And then you realize if you need to extract part of your module or part of your monolith to microservices or not. I think this is a great book and it's written like a story. So you read it from the perspective of a team that struggles with problems. So this is a nice one. And the last one, but I'm just reading it. So it's not that I have finished it already, is Architecture Modernization by Nick Thune. It's the book from this year. And this is something that I can also recommend to you.
I didn't heard about this one. Definitely need to put it on my list then.
Yeah. It's worth to put it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So probably we are finally running out of time. It was a pleasure. We learned. I learned a lot. I hope the viewers will also learn a lot. And keep your fingers crossed that your book will also be recommended by close to everybody in the industry. Like I said, I believe that's possible because it's a very good piece. And I will definitely will share it with all the people who are keen to go into the architecture stream of work because it's not always the work. That's probably yet another topic that we could just discuss. However, this topic, like I said, multiple hours, that would be probably amount of time necessary to discuss all the topics related to the architecture. That's very broad field. It was a pleasure. And like I said, keeping finger crossed that for your book and for the future title, because I believe it's not the last one we are getting from you.
Thank you. It was an honor to be a part of this interview. Regarding the next book, yeah, probably I will make a little bit of break because, yeah, it takes a lot of time and it's quite tiring to write all these things, edit it and so on. So
project managing with it connected.
Yeah, you know, I never say no. We will see. We will see how it goes.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.